The presentation of anarchism, a social philosophy which aims at the emancipation, economic, social, political, and spiritual, of the human race. The emancipation.
Anarchist Essays is brought to you by Loughborough University's Anarchism Research Group. For more information on the ARG, see the link in the show notes or follow us on Twitter at ARGLBORO.
Black Cataclysm, Anarchism and Ruination by Sam C. Tenorio. In 2015, to commemorate the Watts Uprising, the Los Angeles Times published a series of op-eds and editorials reflecting on the watershed moment and its legacy. From the standpoint of the half a century past, Watts, 50 years later, in large part attempted to distance itself from its 1965 coverage that was grossly unsympathetic and unquestionably hazardous to Black Angelenos. At the same time, the retrospect's very titling was careful to rescind any necessity to name the fierce confrontation with local, state, and federal forces a riot or a rebellion. In the wider discourse for popular protests of increasingly gratuitous anti-Black police violence, there remains a controversy of terms and a necessary resistance to sensationalized representations of such events. Robin D.G. Kelly's Times op-ed echoes this in his opening warning to expect on this day crude reductions to gruesome statistics and violence. Something readers were all too familiar with a year to the day from the severe police suppression of the 2014 protests in Ferguson, Missouri. Still, Kelly's claim that what they burned is less important than what they built, couched in the assessment that a focus on violence and looting fails to engage residents' actual confrontation with social and economic catastrophe, begs the question, what if the opposite is true? In 1965, as 6 days of tempestuous confrontations with the state ensued, political officials and pundits decried random terror and lawlessness, and they were not referring to the police. Like Kelly, many scholars have decisively troubled these accounts, explaining the inciting conditions and continued effects. This essay gestures toward these questions, but engages the indicia of rebellion's insensate rage of destruction, like arson, theft, and vandalism, as a fundamentally germane set of spatial subversions, allowing us to understand the communiques of the conflagration differently. Through this spatial refraction, rebellion's Black anarchist force reveals cataclysmic critique, a disruptive leap from white society's urban ghetto, antagonistic to both state and civil society. Pushing past the police perimeter of where politics takes place and how it is to be conducted, Watts residents confronted militarized forces and civilians cohered as a white panic. Further, despite characterizations running the gamut of desultory and reactionary to criminal and cathartic, these destructive practices abut the state's own property analysis and solutions by proposing questions of property itself and interrupting an ever-growing nexus paying fealty to law and order. Listening at the socio-spatial register allows us to hear the rebellion differently, where ruination counters the state fables of the common good and crime prevention told through environmental design that inalienably link property and the police. A 1968 study on white reactions to the Watts Rebellion found that while some whites were sympathetic to its reasons linked to a history of injustice, the vast majority thought it hurt the Negroes' cause, and that it would only increase the social distance between the races. It is unclear what the cause was believed to be, although the paradigm of race relations that seems to rear its head, as indicated by the reference to social distance, does offer some clues. Used in part as a barometer to determine political acceptability, this application of race relations is undergirded by two major assumptions. The first is the divine right of the state and civil society to decide the worthiness of Black people to exist in proximity. The second is that the cause is undoubtedly a pursuit of assimilation, integration, and inclusion. Almost a week after the uprising in Watts began, Representative Adam Powell, Chair of the House Education and Labor Committee, and first Black representative to be elected to Congress from New York, issued into the congressional record an extension of remarks entitled Anatomy of a Riot. In it, he argued that the recent series of events was caused by a deep-set anger in the Black community, stemming from historical deprivations they have suffered at the hands of a largely callous and indifferent white society. This explanation was given in tandem with a sharp disavowal of the riots and praise of President Johnson for condemning the inexcusable outbreak of violence. The underlying cause for Powell is not the racial structures of power per se, but the white leadership that has soundly and repeatedly rejected the efforts of Black people to participate fully in the running of the total community. So while he clocked Watts as a sociological detonation of unbelievable proportions, he also assailed it as an orgy of purposeless annihilation that vexed his American identity. In part, Powell was upset that Black residents in Los Angeles had given up the moral high ground that was earned in the early 1960s by the nonviolence of the civil rights movement. In the same move, he also invokes the state as the organ and channel of change, where state reforms were meant to mobilize Black populations pursuing the democratic promise of inclusion. As such, Powell too obfuscates the central antagonism of white sovereign will and Black liberation as he ushers the uprising through the narthex of race relations, often illustrated through a cycle of contact, conflict, accommodation, and assimilation. Powell is quite in step with the larger arguments and proposed solutions garnered in the various state and federal commissions from McCone to Kerner. Both commissions resolutely call for improving Black living conditions, access to education, and the relations between the police and the Black community. Categories understood as the underlying causes for the urban unrest. For the state, the Black ghetto that houses the Black family was both the reason and the evidence for the spiral of failure. State solutions explicitly proposed through housing development and urban renewal, or implicitly issued by the fiat of political derision, meant to adjudicate the alleged causes of the Watts uprising as a matter of propriety and the proprietary. A variegated conglomerate of state actors taking the order of society for granted, they are resolved in its maintenance as they propagate the paradigmatic language of race relations and its assumed logic of assimilatory objective. As Powell's ascriptions to the proper governmental channels prohibit the surfacing of alternative ways of doing that unsettle the fabled national promise of full citizenship, property destruction extrapolates debates of this objective in the provocation of disorder. Powell's words, calling out the participants for wasting precious energy and futility and citing misdirection as it was aimed inwardly against ourselves, illustrate many of the problems that violent urban uprisings raise for our political imaginaries structured by loyalty to state authority and lineal reformist transformation. Its temporal and orientational grammar faithfully envisage state repair and ardently dismiss vandalism as no better than a pernicious exercise. Powell or any other reformist is not the obstacle, of course. Given the promise of violence and the closure of politics to the practice of the gratuitously disenfranchised, this spatial elaboration of urban uprising is not a romantic one, and it does not portend obliteration of the state, or, for that matter, any easy reflection. What it is, however, is the query of the fire, a turn to the intellect of destructive disruption, or what Mabel O. Wilson, Sean Anderson, and the Black Reconstruction collective term unbuilding, as an aperture of the antagonism and interruption of state prescripts and prescriptions. In the act of property destruction, we are struck with the suggestion that ghettoization is neither a state aberration nor an instantiated and established place, but a deliberative process. rather than a moment in which Black rights are simply being revoked or ignored. Destruction as a method of taking apart in order to understand how the built fabric came to be reveals a non-habitation, where any claim of ownership ruefully initiated by the state cannot also be suspended at its behest. While the popular admonishment of the urban revolt as riot deploys imagery of uncritical destruction that is pointlessly disruptive and generally ineffective, destruction asks what it means to absent absence, to leave the ruins of failed reconstruction in utter ruination. As I have discussed elsewhere, creation and destruction are coeval to Black anarchist politics. Not in a naive hope, but with an understanding that practiced destruction and violence may provide constitutive thrusts summed by the belief that violence is necessary to the destruction of violence and the anticipation of alternatives. This recognition of direct action is best conceptualized in the axiom, the propaganda of the deed. The deed of destruction is in this way communicative. In his elaboration of Black anarchism, William C. Anderson conceptualizes ruination as a revolutionary abolitionism, where the bold confrontation with the state requires the process of destruction. But if the Watts Rebellion as cataclysm is speaking, what is it saying? Rather than provide declarations, destruction may be better understood as asking questions. It asks of the anti-Black conditions fundamental to state solutions of urban renewal packaged in housing plans and commission reports as repressions that occur in the practice and relations of property. If the societal valuation of property is based on shared understandings of who can do what with space and resources, then the destruction of property is a rejoinder disrupting the propertied foundations of social life. It is of no surprise that property destruction is vilified in the media as ineffectual and juvenile. Pathologies issued as indictments, imputations of communities who turn inward to destroy their own communities. Yet such accusations fall on deaf ears that effectively issue their own scathing doubt, exploding in the fault lines of territoriality's antagonism. Whose property, whose destruction, and how to ruin ruins? In the Watts Rebellion, the physical buildings themselves acquired symbolic value as their destruction performs a deprivation of economic value and interrupts the space of capital, but also as physical markers of their impoverished non-belonging. In this articulation, property destruction and theft challenge the structural foundations of white society expressed through practices of Black ghettoization that not only house Black populations, but on whose capitalist structures of accumulation and desire it depends. In listening to what the upheaval is speaking, the question of whose property, expressed in the direct action of property destruction, is a multi-layered critique, a leap from the ghetto, a leap to destructive alterity, a leap against white sovereignty. If property is the right to exclude, then property destruction, far from indicating a desire for societal inclusion, is instead a rejection of its system in sum. While white society admonishes Black communities for having laid waste to their home and to their autonomy, ruination may emphasize a form of critique punctuating that neither home nor autonomy was ever in hand. To use the words of George Jackson, their line is ain't nobody but Black folks gonna die in a revolution. This argument completely overlooks the fact that we always have done most of the dying and still do. As Jackson invokes death as the condition under which Black people in the ghetto are already forced to live, he does not intend for Black lives to be executed in vain, but argues that the fight toward any alternative future may indeed come at the cost of violence against those who oppress, to destroy violence with violence. This assessment runs perpendicular to the lugubrious judgment offered by the McCone Commission that violence and lawlessness leads to a dead end, meant to occlude the revolt as a failed mode of freedom. Jackson's words are indeed jarring, and this dissonance is heard in the rebellion itself. much to the dismay of many who seek security rather than risk. This refuge is often disseminated in the search for demand, for clarity, and indeed for the propagandist's intention, where any legible answer to the search is subject to the safe vantage of state horizons. The question of demands is meant to obfuscate. The cataclysmic vantage of the Watts Rebellion overflows on a narrative meant to misapprehend both the political subjectivity of Black people and their conditions of possibility. The narrative that maintains the vote, electoral politics, or state-sponsored tactics as something that can properly represent Black interrogations. Demands, as Johann Casper argues, are simply screens to interface between worlds of rage and worlds of law, which presume that interface is possible and are meant to pull us to the perspective of the law as a significant effector of change rather than staged encounters of racial antagonism and the source of wanton degradation. Powell's desire for the demand and disgust with what he calls a riot thus betrays his reliance on Western political proceduralism. This common turn to the systematic progression through electoral representation may serve the questions at the level of civil rights, but can it make sense of those and for those who have been rendered socially dead? The disillusion with demand also reveals why the destructive refusals of Black anarchism may not correspond to a politics of prefiguration. As many across radical traditions adhere to prefiguration as a necessary tenet, where learning by doing generates the possibility to reveal alternative logics of life, such an orientation can overdetermine what is transformative. The danger of fitting these practices into this normative frame is that what is prefigured exists by definition within the dimensions of the known and only provide contestations of the world that are compatible with the indefinite reproduction of this world. Similar to the inquiry for demand, prefiguration inhibits our understanding of the philosophical content of the revolt as it privileges questions of what is achieved by revolt rather than the questions that are asked. The physically destructive revolt, like the enslaved who jumps the slave ship, holds no guarantees of what may come, and thankfully has the potential of embodying possibilities of which we have no understanding. This is indeed the anticipatory power of the cataclysm as refusal and as erasure. Neither we nor those who generate revolt can know what those possibilities are. Indeed, the revolt does not remake the world. But in its interruptive questioning of our current world, it surely takes the first step in clearing ground for its anticipation.
Thank you for listening. To help others find Anarchist Essays, please rate and review us wherever you find your podcasts. And if you're interested in anarchist ideas, why not check out the journal Anarchist Studies? For over 20 years, Anarchist Studies has been publishing original research on the history, theory, and practice of anarchism. For more information, visit www.lwbooks.co.uk/anarchist-studies.